Welcome to Dream Journey, Breaking the Dream Barriers. I'm Georgia Lee Arts, your host. This is Women's History Month and Burnout, Part 3. After the last podcast, I received a question. Is career enmeshment related to narcissism? That is a great question. Career enmeshment and narcissism can be related, but they are not the same thing. Career enmeshment occurs when a person's identity is overly tied to their job, making their sense of self-worth dependent on their career success. But narcissism, on the other hand, is a personality trait or a disorder that is characterized by grandiosity, a need for admiration, and a lack of empathy. Here are a few ways that career enmeshment and narcissism can be related. So one could be narcissistic supply through work. A person with narcissistic tendencies may become enmeshed in their career because it provides external validation rather than an intrinsic self-worth, status, and admiration. Work achievements can serve as supply to bolster self-esteem. And then there's perfectionism and over-identification. Both career enmeshment and narcissism can involve perfectionism and an excessive focus on achievement, but often at the expense of personal relationships and well-being. And then there's a fear of failure and shame. Enmeshment with a career may stem from deep-seated fears of inadequacy. Some individuals with narcissistic traits have a fragile self-esteem behind their confidence, so you don't always see it right away. But this makes them highly susceptible to an identity crisis if their career falters. And then there is control and status. Somebody who's narcissistic might control their career narrative to maintain an image of success. They would see failure or setbacks as personal attacks rather than opportunities for growth. And work is what provides them that control, power, and recognition. And then there's the lack of boundaries. Career enmeshment often leads to poor work-life balance, and a narcissistic person may also blur boundaries between or by expecting work to serve their emotional needs or personal validation. But there are some key differences between what career enmeshment is and narcissism. So someone with career enmeshment may struggle with self-worth issues, while a narcissist may externalize blame and seek admiration. Career enmeshment can stem from external pressures, such as culture, family expectations, while narcissism often originates from deep personality structures. A person who is enmeshed with their career may suffer from burnout and identity loss, whereas a narcissist may struggle more with interpersonal conflicts and entitlement. When I reflect on my own burnout, I knew that I was exhausted, but I didn't know what burnout was or see the train at the end of the tunnel. The doctor wasn't much help and assumed that I was just trying to get out of work. And the medical field is also in burnout, and doctors don't typically have a lot of time. So I never did get the time off that I needed. If you are a doctor who is out there listening, please refer your patients to me because I can help them pivot so they don't have to burn out. So in my burnout, I no longer had time for non-work activities. Everything revolved around my job. But my career was destroying my health, my family, my values, and my ability to have a social life. So I pivoted myself to be what I thought would be a stable 9-to-5 role. Not only was it another toxic work center, but I was put back on shift work. The concept of operations, which is similar to a business plan, and there was a design flaw in it, and our mission was constantly shifting. My role, my responsibilities would change by the week. My new job was unstable and consuming. It was like quicksand. It didn't allow for work-life balance. Sometimes the nature of our job is what drives career enmeshment and burnout, and we find ourselves fighting against the mesh that keeps us stuck without the right tools to get out. From this, I learned how to evaluate potential employers, identify red flags, set boundaries, and look beyond the golden handcuffs to redefine success. In the last episode, we talked about career enmeshment and the Devil Wears Prada movie. So now I'm going to shift and put on my English major and former psychology major hat, and let's do a deeper analysis of narcissism in The Devil Wears Prada. So this film portrays narcissism through its characterization of Miranda Priestly. She is the powerful and ruthless editor-in-chief of Runway Magazine. Her character embodies narcissistic traits commonly seen in high-powered leadership roles, particularly in industries like fashion, where status and control are paramount. And this reminds me of the work center that I burned out in. Miranda is played by Meryl Streep. And so Miranda displays several key narcissistic behaviors. One of them is a grandiosity and a sense of superiority. She believes that she is above everyone else, expecting absolute deference. Her famous "that's all" dismissal showcases her cold detachment from her subordinates. She assumes that her employees should anticipate her needs without explicit instructions. Miranda also shows no regard for her assistants' personal struggles. She shows no empathy, expecting them to prioritize her every demand. She forces Andy, who is played by Anne Hathaway, to cancel her personal plans and risk her relationship for the job. Even when she faces divorce, she uses it as a tool to maintain control rather than showing vulnerability. And then there is manipulation and exploitation. She leverages power dynamics to keep employees in a constant state of fear. She very subtly manipulates Andy, rewarding her with praise only after breaking her spirit first. And she throws Nigel under the bus to protect her own position despite his loyalty. In narcissism, there is perfectionism and control. Miranda's expectations are impossibly high. She punishes those who do not meet her unspoken standards. She has absolute control over her employees' lives. This movie highlights how narcissistic leadership creates a toxic work dynamic. And it leads to fear-based motivation rather than genuine inspiration. It leads to high turnover and burnout. And that you saw with Andy's predecessor. And also distorted values where personal sacrifices are equated with professional success. But the film also suggests that narcissism and leadership can also drive excellence. So Miranda's perfectionism shapes Runway into a global powerhouse. And this just, it really reflects the real world complexity of narcissistic leadership. While it can yield results, but it's often at a human cost. So here's a question. Is Miranda a classic narcissist or just a strategic survivor? While she exhibits the narcissistic traits, she also shows signs of emotional depth and vulnerability. Her quiet reaction to her impending divorce kind of suggests an inner turmoil. And she acknowledges Andy's talent in the end, indirectly. She operates in a cutthroat industry where power struggles dictate survival. This complexity makes Miranda a compelling character. So she's not purely a villain, but rather a product of her environment. What are some lessons in dealing with narcissistic bosses? One would be setting boundaries. So when we look at the character of Andy, she ultimately reclaims her identity by walking away. She doesn't take it personally because Miranda's behavior reflects her own insecurities and not her employee's worth. It's recognizing the cost of success. Ambition is important, but at what price? And then Andy Sachs, played by Anne Hathaway, she undergoes this transformational journey. She moves from ambitious yet naive to someone who ultimately rejects that toxic influence of narcissistic leadership. So she has a classic struggle when we look at her character arc. So there is success at the cost of identity versus personal integrity. How can she break free from the narcissistic influence? There's the initial idealization. So she falls under the narcissist spell at the beginning of the film. Andy sees a job at Runway as a stepping stone to her journalism career. Though she initially dismisses fashion as superficial, she slowly becomes enthralled by Miranda's power, influence, and high standards. And this reflects how narcissistic figures often draw people in through charisma and prestige. They create this environment where people feel special for being chosen. Andy starts being indifferent to Miranda's opinions, but soon craves her validation. Because Miranda's power is seductive. The prestige of working under Miranda blinds Andy to the sacrifices that she is actually making. And this mirrors real-life working experiences under narcissistic bosses where people justify toxic environments because they equate being chosen with being valuable. And she's losing herself. The cost of narcissistic influence is that as Andy becomes more invested in her job, she slowly loses her sense of self. And she adopts the same work ethic that Miranda enforces. This reflects how narcissistic environments erode personal boundaries and reshape identity. And she's prioritizing work over personal life. She sacrifices time with her boyfriend, friends, and family. She becomes the very thing that she resented. And then she mocks the new assistant, Emily, for obsessing over fashion. Yet she herself transforms into Miranda's perfect assistant. So this is a moral compromise. And then she betrays Emily by taking her place on the Paris trip. Something the old Andy would never have done. So sometimes in a work center, there's people who are good people, and sometimes they do bad things, and it isn't because they're a narcissist. But there's a difference between narcissism and narcissistic personality disorder. And sometimes every human being can do things that are on a narcissistic scale. And when we're in really toxic environments, it can drive people to do crazy things. And there's a breaking point. You have to recognize the narcissistic trap. So Andy's wake-up call comes when she realizes she's becoming a reflection of Miranda. And there's two pivotal moments that lead to her decision to leave. One is Miranda's betrayal of Nigel. Miranda sacrifices her loyal right-hand man to save herself, showing Andy that success in this world requires ruthless self-interest. And there's Miranda's comparison to Andy. Miranda tells Andy, "Everyone wants to be us," implying that Andy has already become part of the machine. Andy is horrified, and her expression shows that she sees herself through Miranda's lens, and she doesn't like what she has become. In narcissistic relationships, this moment of self-recognition is crucial. It's when a person realizes that they have been manipulated into adopting a toxic mindset, they've given up personal values for external validation, and they've lost sight of their true goals. So now we're going to try to break free and reclaim identity. So Andy, she finally makes that decisive break. She walks away from Miranda and the world of Runway. She leaves on her own terms, unlike Emily, who clings to Miranda's approval despite the constant mistreatment. Andy chooses self-respect over career advancement. She then laughs at Miranda's behavior instead of fearing her. She finds it absurd, showing that Miranda has lost her psychological hold over her. And then she reclaims her original goals. So Andy returns to journalism, but this time it's on her own terms. So by rejecting Miranda's influence, Andy symbolizes the breaking free of the cycle of narcissistic control and realigning it with her true identity. And there's a final test. It is a silent acknowledgement that the movie's ending is nuanced. When Andy sees Miranda again, she no longer fears or seeks that approval. And instead of being dismissed, Miranda gives a rare smirk. And that is a sign of acknowledgement and respect. So now Miranda may see Andy as a disappointment, but Andy doesn't need her approval anymore. Andy has transformed not into a version of Miranda, but into a version of her own person. So there's lessons on escaping narcissistic influence. It's recognizing the cost, that it isn't worth it, not confusing approval with value. Just because somebody who's powerful praises you, it doesn't mean that they define your worth. And listening to what your gut says. When you feel like you're losing yourself, take a step back. And have the courage to walk away. The greatest power move is to leave on your own terms. So let's do a deeper analysis of how narcissistic relationships mirror the power dynamic between Miranda and Andy. Corporate narcissists, they maintain power through strategic manipulation, psychological control, and self-serving leadership. Miranda embodies this through the movie. So here's the traits. There's grandiosity and perceived superiority. Miranda is worshipped as the queen of fashion. Her presence alone sends her people into a panic, and she enjoys the fear that she commands. She maintains this untouchable aura, rarely acknowledging her employees unless they meet her impossibly, ridiculously high standards. And she dismisses other people with a look of silence, reinforcing that she believes that she's above them. And there's a real world parallel. Toxic bosses create an illusion of invincibility, making employees feel replaceable and desperate for that approval. And there's exploitation and emotional manipulation. You see Miranda taking credit for other people's work while offering little to no appreciation. And then she forces Andy to sacrifice her personal life under the guise of proving herself. She also gaslights her employees into believing that they're lucky to be in her presence, even when they're being mistreated. And the real-world parallel here is that narcissistic bosses manipulate through guilt, unrealistic demands, emotional blackmail, making employees feel that their suffering is justified. And then there is devaluation and fear-based leadership. So Miranda humiliates Andy in front of her colleagues. Boy, do I ever remember this happening in my life. Employees live in a constant state of failure, even for minor mistakes, results in public shaming, maybe termination. She weaponizes unpredictability. One day she'll show that very rare approval, but then the next day she'll be cold and dismissive. And the real world parallel here is that in toxic workplaces, fear is used as a motivational tool, keeping employees too anxious to question the leadership. And then a hallmark trait is the lack of empathy and disposable employees. You see that where Miranda betrays Nigel, her most loyal supporter, to protect her own career. She never apologizes, acknowledges sacrifices, or expresses gratitude. She just keeps demanding more. She expects employees to work tirelessly for that reward, but there's no reward. She views them as tools rather than as people. And a real-world parallel is that narcissistic bosses discard employees without hesitation, prioritizing their image and power over loyalty. And then there is the cult of the narcissistic leader. And this is why employees stay. So if Miranda is so toxic, why do people stay, right? The answer lies in psychological conditioning, fear, and the illusion of prestige, and the lucky to be here illusion. So the employees at Runway believe that working for Miranda is a privilege despite the abuse. This is a common narcissistic workplace tactic, making employees think that if I leave, I'll never find another opportunity this good. I remember thinking that very same thing. If I work harder, I'll finally earn their approval. Everyone wants to be in my position, so I should be grateful. And the real-world parallel is that toxic bosses convince employees that they are chosen and lucky to suffer for the job. And then there is trauma bonding. This is emotional manipulation. So Miranda occasionally offers approval, creating an addictive cycle of chasing validation. They believe they need to be better to succeed, to work harder. The high stress, high reward environment makes people equate suffering with success. And there's a real world parallel. Narcissistic leaders use intermittent reinforcement, making employees cling to rare moments of validation. And then there's a fear of the unknown. So many of Miranda's employees fear leaving because they have no work-life balance left. They don't know how to function outside the job. Andy initially believes that she must adapt rather than question the toxicity. The industry itself validates toxic behavior, normalizing burnout and overwork. And the real-world parallel is that narcissistic workplaces trap employees by making them believe that they're nothing without their job. A lot of people are running from corporate America because they think they can escape narcissistic leadership and also narcissistic coworkers by creating a business. But let me give you some reality. There's toxicity everywhere, even in the business world. If you are considering leaving your job for the business world, reach out to me because there are many other solutions. And one of the things I've learned in the business world is, you know, another way to find survival strategies. And I've told you a little bit about my story. I created this handbook. It took me a couple of months to create full time. So I presented it to a group I belonged to, but then being told I didn't have the right to a creation because no word in the dictionary is unique. So several months of time I put into creating it, printing cost and credit, stolen by other businesses. And then I joined another group, and a fellow coach was trying to figure out how to get around my copyright and trademark instead of becoming authentic. There's a lot of desperation everywhere we go. And then the other coach who sent my business a fake cease and desist order, threatening me with arrest if I network. There's crazy things that happen everywhere. These coaches are still trying to get public visibility and speaking engagements. I got kicked out of the group after posting on media the need for an attorney, but nobody in the group really knew the backstory. So I become the target of a Mean Girl Facebook smear campaign. And even, which is ironic, Mean Girls was an event I hosted a long time ago, and it was on my social media. And I find myself acting out in self-defense and realizing that isn't the right response. So one of the things we're going to talk about in a future podcast episode is dealing with social media. It can be such a dark triggering place. Some of us are highly visionary and creative, and our creations can have unintended consequences. And sometimes when we create, we stir up envy in other people who don't want to do the work. But here's a question. Do you work for free? I know that I don't work for free, and I know that you don't work for free. And there's one thing that I agree with. And that is the International Coaching Federation, the ICF. They want to regulate the coaching industry. And while I'm not an ICF coach, and I think there's many good coaching certification programs outside of the ICF, I am in agreement with them. Because the coaching industry is under threat, and it's losing its reputation because of coaches like the ones that I just described. There's a lot of failed ethics and fake stuff. And as a consumer, you have to be advised that it is ultimately on you to confirm the qualifications and credibility of any coach that you hire. So if you see new pop-up coaches trying to coach identity, know that they canceled a veteran's business to appropriate a story for public attention and financial gain. But here's the truth, and I told you about this in a previous podcast. People who do that can't get far. When your inner story doesn't match that outer story, even if you are a good manipulator, at some point that mask is going to fall off and people figure it out. People see through authenticity at some point and realize they've been manipulated. Real business success, real career success comes from being authentic. In the last episode, we covered stage one of burnout, which is the compulsion to prove oneself. And then there's stage two, which is working harder, and stage three, neglecting one's own needs. So we hit on those in the previous podcast. So now we're going to cover stage four, which is the displacement of conflict. So the displacement of conflict and burnout refers to psychological defense mechanisms where you redirect unresolved stress, frustration, or conflict from the original source, which would be like, say, your work, your leadership, or maybe personal struggles, onto a safer or unrelated target. So it could show up as misdirected anger, frustration, exhaustion in things like your personal relationships, your health, your physical health, or even workplace dynamics. When individuals who experience prolonged work-related stress, they may displace the frustration instead of confronting the true source of their burnout. And there's people who try, but, you know, the whole medical field is in burnout. So maybe when you show up at your doctor's office, they don't always see it for what it is. But know that it can lead to increased irritability at home, maybe with your colleagues. It could be blaming others. Maybe your family members, coworkers, but it's really an issue that's rooted in work-related stress. And maybe you have physical symptoms that could be headaches, fatigue, and that's due to the unaddressed issues. Or perhaps you have avoidance behaviors like procrastinating, overworking, or isolating. I remember being so exhausted from my toxic job and shift work that everything began collapsing. The doctor didn't get it, my spouse didn't get it, and while we earned enough money, there was the pressure and the value of work put on me that work came first. And that was the main argument. And I thought family and health should come first. But burnout is invisible. It isn't a broken arm that people can see. I remember sinking into isolation because I had no energy left for nothing else. I didn't see that freight train coming, and then it was too late. And this wraps up stage four of burnout. Next week, we're going to continue with stage five of burnout, which is the revision of values. And this week, I challenge you to the Beat Burnout Challenge, and I'd like you to try setting a boundary between work and your personal life. If you are taking work home with you, stop. Put your phone in a separate room when you are having dinner or relaxing at night. And this weekend, try doing nothing. If you are struggling with burnout or trying to survive a toxic job, know that you're not alone. And more importantly, you don't have to stay stuck. I've been there. I know what it takes to come out on the other side. If you are ready to pivot, redefine success, and build a career that aligns with your life, reach out. You deserve a career and a life that energizes you rather than drains you. Thank you for tuning in to Dream Journey Breaking the Dream Barriers. And until next time, mind the gap.